It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrat.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, it's our weekly look at Congress with USA Today politics editor Paul Singer.
First, Wisconsinites headed to the polls yesterday to vote in a variety of primary elections. The winners will head to the general elections in November.
By and large, the results came back as expected, but there was a surprise or two.
Here with us to break down the results is Mordecai Lee, professor of governmental affairs at UW-Milwaukee. Mordecai, welcome back.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, one of the races we thought we wouldn't have to talk about too much looked like it was a done deal. The GOP primary in the 6th Congressional District, it was called for candidate Glenn Grothman, then uncalled. What's going on there?
Well, you know, sometimes we have expectations about precision of vote counting that really aren't quite as reasonable, because it's an old, almost 19th century process where they have to hand count the absentee ballots, they have to call it into the clerk has to write it down. You know, I'm trying to get everybody to visualize that this is a very old-fashioned process. So the fact that on election night we got the results very slowly, and then that his lead started diminishing is, I think, just a reflection of how antiquated our election results reporting process is.
Well, this has happened in a past Supreme Court election where the winner kind of flipped and flopped a little bit as we saw different areas coming in over the course of days.
Rob, I'm glad you're mentioning it, because this is a problem across the board. It's not a problem for Democrats or Republicans or Fox Valley versus Waukesha County. Well, we really do have an antiquated infrastructure.
Do we have a sense of when we're going to know if it's Glenn Grothman or Joe Lipum in that district?
I think what's going to happen is that because it's so close, there's going to be a recount. And whether it's close enough so it's an automatic recount, in other words, within 0.5%, or whether it's slightly beyond it, I'm pretty sure one of the two candidates will do it. And I once participated in a recount, and I can tell you it's a very slow process, but it's a very exacting process and a very reassuring one in terms of trust in government. They really do literally do it one at a time. And so I wouldn't be surprised if the lead changes or if the lead narrows. You know, some of your listeners might remember the recount up in Minnesota that Al Franken eventually won by, 23 votes, and they argued over every single one. So I think it's going to be a couple of weeks.
Well, turning to a county sheriff race. Now, county sheriff races don't usually get a lot of attention outside the borders of a county, sometimes not that much inside the borders of a county. Where you are now, the Milwaukee County Sheriff race got national attention. Why did it draw so much?
You know, it's so surprising. You remember when during the April election, the Koch brothers sided with and opposed some of the county board members up in, I think it was Douglas County or something like that, and people were saying, huh? You know, why is a national organization getting involved in a county board race? Well, the exact same thing happened here in Milwaukee County, and the reason I'm mentioning that earlier example is I think what we're seeing is the nationalizing of local elections. In other words, all of a sudden, every election, even for dog catcher, becomes a kind of a referendum on the partisan gridlock and the ideological gridlock in American politics. And so the sheriff of Milwaukee County is actually the least important sheriff in all the 72 counties in Wisconsin, because Milwaukee County is the only county that doesn't have any unincorporated areas. And that means that the sheriff here has no sort of police department kind of activities. So he does the freeways, and he does county facilities and bailiffs, and that's about it. But even though he's so minor in terms of policy, his views on gun control and on right versus left political ideology made this a kind of a referendum. And so it was an interesting race to watch, even though it seems to me, in terms of policy, a very unimportant one.
Right. The incumbent ended up winning there. Lots of money came in from the NRA, from Mayor Bloomberg's group opposed to or in favor of gun control. This is a seat that will have almost no say on gun control decisions.
You know, it's just astonishing how ideology can make an unimportant office seem important in terms of elections. And in fact, I'd go one step further. Why do we elect sheriffs? We don't elect police chiefs. But this is sort of another example of an antiquated 19th century habit that's carried over into the 21st.
Well, probably the most high-profile primary in statewide races was the attorney general race. We saw Jefferson County District Attorney Susan Happ win over Dane County DA Ishmael Ozan and State Representative John Richards. a race where all three candidates were really, really similar in their positions on almost all issues. What do you think gave Susan Happ the edge there?
You know, this is an astonishing result. And in fact, you could almost say this is why we still hold elections. In other words, for all the pundits and for all the commentators who in advance predict elections, this one was totally unpredictable. And, you know, thank goodness for the Wisconsin voters for reminding us of that. And she really, I'd have to say, came out of nowhere and had such a commanding victory. It's just awesome in that respect. And another thing that I like about it, Rob, is that she was not necessarily the highest spender. You know, sometimes we start getting a bit lazy and we start thinking that the biggest spender in a contested election is always the winner. No, that's not always the case, and she's a good example of it. And you know, there were some minor policy differences between her and the other two Democratic candidates, for example, on gun control, on first offense for drunk driving. But I think here it was almost like a spontaneous conference call by the Democratic voters in the primary who said, let's all coalesce behind her. And I think she's a fresh face, a new face, and I think this is good for the voters because it means that the November election between her and the Republican nominee is going to be a real election with two very competent and qualified candidates.
Moving on to the other big statewide race, the race for state treasurer, before we get to the governor's race now. But it's interesting in that we talked to all the candidates here. We ended up with a Democrat who wants to restore duties to the office, a Republican who wants to get rid of the office completely.
You know, I think this is healthy because, in a sense, even though this is a minor office, there's a clear-cut choice. Voters who think it should stay in elected office get to vote for one of the candidates, and voters who think it should be abolished get to vote for the other. And I'll confess that I'm biased here. When I was in politics so long ago, I introduced a constitutional amendment to abolish both the state treasurer and the secretary of state's office. It's almost like my comment about sheriffs. Why do we still do this? But it's very, very hard to abolish elected offices.
All right. Now let's get to what a lot of people are seeing as the main event here, the race for governor. Briefly, the primary, Democrat Mary Burke cruised by a substantial margin past Brett Halsey. Was this ever really in doubt?
I don't think this was in doubt, and this was probably, from the perspective of the Burke campaign, a kind of a shakedown cruise or a dry run to see how good their organization is. And if judging by the results, even though he ran a minor campaign, they're in pretty good shape, and the Democratic voters are behind her. I was a little surprised that she did not hold a kind of a victory party down in the Milwaukee or Madison area, so she could get on TV and get sort of the momentum one gets from winning a primary, no matter how sort of unimportant it was. After all, Governor Walker last night, having no primary, did a victory party and had a speech on TV. He got to give his message out to a million voters. So I was a bit perplexed by the political logic of her being up near Rhinelander and not being in the main media markets.
Well, the race has already in effect been Burke versus Walker. Now it truly is. Recently, national political pundit Larry Sabato from the University of Virginia called this one of the five most competitive races involving a sitting governor in the country. Headline news, the primary results in some papers. Mordecai, what are you going to be watching for in the coming months in this race?
I think what I'd suggest we all watch for is who successfully defines the race. When we heard Governor Walker's victory speech last night, he was trying to define her. Will she be able to get out from under that? Will she be able to define the race as, let's say, a referendum on his promise of 250,000 jobs? That, I think, is going to be the result. And she's been pretty disciplined about not getting into ideological fights on emotional social issues. She's almost running as though her qualifications are, I'm not Scott Walker. And so we'll see who can prevail in this sort of public debate, who can be more persuasive. And here, money will make a difference. If he outspends her 2-1, that means we'll be seeing two commercials for every one she has.
Well, there's a lot of people in the state who'd vote for Darth Vader if he was on the right ticket. What about that handful of undecided voters? How do they reach out to them?
Rob, I really love it that you're mentioning it because there are about 6 to 8% of of voters, likely voters, who claim that they're undecided in the governor's race. Now this is sort of an astonishing phenomenon. How could somebody not have an opinion about what's been happening since Act 10? You know, you wonder if they're off the grid, if they're living in the Stone Age. But you're right to focus on it, because if the race right now is 46-46 or 47-47, those 6 or 8% will determine the election. And I think what we're seeing is that both campaigns are sort of fishing for what will be the magnet that will attract these voters, what will budge them off of being in the middle of the road and undecided. And to a certain extent, that's the election. The secret to the undecided is the secret to winning the November election.
We'll be watching that between now and November. Mordecai, thanks for joining us again.
Thanks, Rob.
That's Mordecai Lee, professor of governmental affairs at UW-Milwaukee.